Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me for this Monday mailbag episode is Shay Dixon. Shay, we got done with Brian Kelly around, 12:30 or so, and so now we're here to jump on and answer the questions from our board.
Yes, and my back by popular demand, matching the points to my thoughts on the game, my 32 points, 32 thoughts, is posted. As someone said, it was a lot easier in the Les Miles era of Bama games. Coming up with 32 talking points was a good bit, but I got there. So if you haven't checked it out, go read it.
Yeah, no 9-6 score here, even though it looked like it for a half.
Or just no points.
Yeah, just zero. Just nothing at all. But real quick before we get started, I do want to plug the site because I do it at the end of the podcast, but I'll do it at the beginning. But yeah, $1 for a year, the amount of recruiting information that Shay and Billy provides you, along with some of the national guys that also contribute, I mean, it is second to none. It's tremendous. And so I see how many people watch our videos, and I just want to make sure we get that out at the beginning. The Bengal Tiger on three, subscribe for $1.
And you get the hat for free.
And you get the hat.
And so, I've talked to the office. We still have hundreds and hundreds of hats. So
not a shortage of hats.
Jump in. $1 for a year. Get on three access to everything. You can read everything on the network and then get the hat. So we even had one fan who said that he threw his hat in celebration in Tiger Stadium when it ended and the buzzer sounded, and now he doesn't know where it is. So we're going to have to get him another one.
I saw
hats for everybody.
Yeah. On Twitter, we had two people tweeted us that a picture of them wearing the hat, and they were saying it was good luck in the game, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Tweeted us all the
pictures. I need to find that then.
Yeah,
tweeted us your photos wearing the hat.
I'll get the retweets. They were all excited. It was great.
I'll get the retweets on that.
Yep.
All right, mailbag time. Where are we starting?
Got a lot, Shay. Right. A lot of questions.
We have two pages. Okay, we always say that we're going to go quick, but then we end up taking forever on the first half, and then we just speed through everybody else. So we will try to do some full out sprints in what looks like a marathon here. The first two questions, Maddie B, Tiger Cycling and Mr. Virgo are kind of the same.
Yeah.
Tiger Cycling asked, what are y'all's thoughts on Eli Ricks's performance against LSU? Looked like he got overwhelmed in his return to BR. And then Mr. Virgo asked, do you think the wide receivers took the matchup personal with Eli Ricks? Maddie B, you want to take it first? Eli Ricks, former teammate of Kayshon Boutte and Malik Nabers, got worked over a bit on Saturday.
Yeah, and they definitely went after him. And, I mean, early in the game, they went after Kool-Aid McKinstry. I mean, both the corners, Alabama kind of left them on islands at times. And if you're LSU, you know, we've been waiting for Kayshon and Malik to – I mean, they've both been good this year. Not saying they've been bad, especially Malik. He's led the team. But you've waited for this type of performance where you can just be like, all right, you're going to put them in one-on-one situations. We're going to throw it at you. And that's what Jaden did. And they came through time after time. So I thought both Eli and Kool-Aid had a little bit of a tougher performance. Some pass interference calls, obviously, on Eli had a couple. But one that led to a score, I believe, in the end zone in the corner there. But yeah, it was not a great performance from them, but I do think they were asked to do a lot, which is kind of, you know, tough situation for any corner going against those guys.
Yeah, but those are two talented corners, and Eli's coming off. Kool-Aid's been playing all year. Eli was banged up and then had his best game before the bye week. So for them to go, I mean, they were attacking him, as you said, and Nabers and Boutte. Remember this, there was only one other receiver who caught a pass. It was Kyron Lacy for five yards. It was a first down. He got popped and he held onto it. It was a great play. But Nabers and Boutte combined 15 targets, 13 catches, about 100 yards combined between them. Solid game. A lot of first downs. Malik drew a ton of penalty flags on him. Mm-hmm. I just thought Ricks looked really frustrated. I think it was clear he was getting beat. The shoving the Nabers out of bounds on a ball that he didn't need to. That play in the end zone, he had shoved him down on when Daniels had thrown it away.
Mm-hmm.
Sloppy mistakes. Yeah, I think Ricks, they got in his head early. It was evident.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Nope, not a great return there.
Yeah. All right, what we got next here?
Mark George, can you guys give a rough guess at how many spots you think we end up being able to use with high school and transfer guys? I know it's a loaded question, but just a rough guess. Basically, who you think makes stay and who may declare. The stay and declare, we'll figure out later. There's so many names that could go into that, especially with COVID year now where you can have the extra year or not. There's so many guys who can still weigh that, but they're at 25 commits now. I think they'll probably take four or five more high school guys, five, six transfers. So I could see them taking 35 guys in this class in terms of new guys coming onto the team, which is a lot. But the only rule is you have to stay under the 85 total scholarship limit by the NCAA when fall camp begins next year. So they've got a long way to figure that out. But I do think, hell, with 25 commits, they could sign 25 in December. It's not out of the realm of possibility to think that they're going to add more high school commits to that, let alone transfers. So put me down for 35.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable number, because if they get high school wise, if they get close to 30 or so, I think transfer portal, we've seen most teams stay around the 7 to 8 range, I'd say, you know, give or take. Last year, I believe most teams were around 7, 6, 7, 8. So I think that's a reasonable number for
LSU is at 18, 19.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a different level. So, like, you know, the Ole Miss, the LSU, the USC's, those type of teams that are completely revamping and kind of reloading. I think those teams are outliers. I think most teams will be in the 6 to 8 range.
And Brian Kelly said it too throughout the offseason. He said they took more transfers than they sent high school guys this past year. So he said that will never be the case again. That's not how you build a program. And that's evident. They've already got 25 high school commits and they're not going to take more than 10 transfers. So that number won't even be close. Let's see. Seawalk 54. This might be his first question in a mailbag. But he's got a two-parter. I know you guys like to say the outcome of game, win or loss, doesn't matter much to a recruit. Does that still hold true for a game like this where he slayed the giant, quote unquote? In other words, would this weekend have been such a splash with recruits if the result would have gone the other direction? And then we'll get to a second question. I actually think – I don't remember if it was you and I. You were the only person I was sitting next to, so it must have been you, unless I was talking to myself. But no, it was in the game thread. That when that game went into overtime, I just said, hey, look, win or lose, the recruits here saw an amazing game.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, like, had they gotten blown out, of course it would have been different. But had the overtime gone a different way and Bama won, I think LSU still would have been able to sell what they're, you know, the performance, the environment, all those things. Now, winning the game, seeing the field being rushed, having a chance to be in the driver's seat to Atlanta, I think goes a long way. I mean, we saw Kyrie Lee commit after the game. That one was expected. Dylan Carpenter on Sunday, that one was expected. I think your hope now, if you're an LSU fan, is that guys like Desmond Ricks, Javian Toviano, others that were there, see that environment, got to experience it, and then factor that win into the reality of, hey, look, LSU is not taking a kind of a backseat to the rest of the SEC right now, and that it's going to take time for them to get back. But that in year one of Brian Kelly, they're already rocking and rolling, which is a shock to most of us. Second part of his question, Matty B, you can take this one. You concerned that with as mediocre as Arkansas has played of late, an 11 a.m. Fayetteville could be a trap game with LSU still riding high off the emotions of beating Bama. Matty B, I'll toss in there. Vegas, -3 for LSU right now, and the kickoff should be about 35, 36 degrees.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the weather is something you are worried about. I mean, obviously down here in Louisiana, it's 85 degrees right now. So, you know, 50-degree difference going up to Arkansas. I don't know about the players, but for me personally, I'm uncomfortable in anything under like 45. So,
thank God you're not suiting up.
Yeah, I'm not suiting up though. So, you know, they're stronger than me. They're tougher than me. All that good stuff. But still, I think the trap game sentiment is something that I, you know, like for example, when I covered North Texas, you always had that concern. But that's you're talking about Brian Kelly, and it's very different talking about Brian Kelly than talking about any other, most probably almost every other coach in the country, really. And that's why I compare it to my experience in North Texas. I would never say what I said about North Texas when I'm talking about Brian Kelly's team, if that makes sense. Like, I just think they've done so well staying within the moment, staying focused. I can't see that waning now. And that's not something that's new either, right? This, they didn't just get focused for this Alabama game, which I think he kind of talked about in the press conference today. They didn't just focus on the Alabama game like it was a special game or it was something different. To me, I think back to those summer and fall player interviews where the players were like, accountability, all this stuff, all the cliches they were preaching then are still being preached now. And so I look at it as, in theory, yes, it is a trap game, but I really, really trust Brian Kelly to get them on, you know, even keeled going into this one.
Today's Monday. We talked with Brian Kelly today. He was asked straight up, do you believe in, is this a trap game? He said he doesn't really believe in trap games. And yeah, for the reasons you mentioned, I agree. I'll throw out one more stat here. I put this in my 32-point story. Brian Kelly is now, after that Bama game, won 17 straight games in the month of November. So what are you playing, four games in November? So that's four straight years at Notre Dame that they won every game in November. And then you toss in this one to get to 17 over Bama. He's talked a lot about November is for contenders and, you know, all of the different verbiage he uses to kind of keep them focused. But I think it's clear that they are dialed in, as you said. And I kind of thought, you know, you always say this as a coach, oh, the team always expects to win, but he kind of came back with a thought today that I hadn't heard him say yet this year, which is he's like, look, when we go through practice and prep and we're about to head out from the locker room to the field, I get the sense from the team that they truly think they're winning every game. And there were Tennessee, nobody expected them to win. They got routed. Yeah. And he said, look, they went into that game thinking they were going to win. So the idea of moving from the hunter to the hunted, I don't know if that applies here because I kind of think LSU's already been in a lot of spots where they feel like they were the team that was getting chased this year, Auburn, State, Florida State. I mean, you name it. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's something to watch for. JWP, what's up with Armani Goodwin and will Perkins play propel him to all SEC and freshman All-American? I absolutely think Harold Perkins will be a freshman All-American. Yes. I think he'll be freshman All-SEC. I don't know about all SEC, but certainly he's been phenomenal, and he was phenomenal again this weekend. Matty B, you asked about Brian Kelly, about Goodwin, your thoughts on his response.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said that it was Frank Wilson's kind of call to have Emery and Williams as their 1-2 punch this game, which I think makes complete sense, that you needed a little bit more physicality there and a threat to pass protect in situations. Armani Goodwin, I think, is by of the three, the worst in pass protection situations. So you needed to have them there in case you wanted to go fast. You needed to have Emery in there. I thought Emery just ran the ball. Both of them obviously ran the ball really, really well. And then, you know, Emery made the play out of the backfield. So I think he was feeling good in the night. And then I think Goodwin's a healthy, but you didn't need him out there, I don't think, in that situation.
Well, and that was a big thing. We thought he must have been injured because he had one carry and then never got back in. Yeah. But Brian Kelly said he's perfectly fine and then said he'll be definitely a part of things moving forward. Zegoshe 51, we kind of touched on this for a second, but your thoughts on the -3 line against Arkansas? Am I being overly optimistic after the last three games and thinking we should cover easily? Anytime you think something, a bet is easy to win, it's where it gets dangerous.
Yes. Yes, no, that's the terrifying thing, is that we're all looking at this the same way. We're all like, this team just beat Alabama, you know, they beat Ole Miss, they beat Florida, like they won all these games, and then they go to Arkansas, a team that lost to Liberty, had, a couple players arrested after the game. Like, this is a team that is reeling in every single way.
KJ Jefferson, their quarterback, has been hurt.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this on paper and you're like, all right, LSU, I thought it would be a touchdown plus spread. It ends up being three. And you're just like, what am I missing here? And so we'll see. It definitely is. It feels trappy. It feels trappy. But we'll get into that, you know, as the week goes on with the previous.
We'll watch too. Yeah. If that line moves at all. Hasn't yet, but we'll see what happens as the week goes on. Grape Swisher. Can LSU beat Georgia? I think we'd be the best team they face. JD makes LSU a threat to anyone in the country, and our defense might be the second best in the country behind Georgia's. I don't know if I'm on board with Grape Swisher here.
I mean, he said LSU would be the best team they faced, and they just beat Tennessee pretty soundly, even though the score was a little bit closer than I think even it indicated.
You think Tennessee's better than LSU, right?
I think so.
I mean, didn't they beat them?
Yes, like, yeah, obviously, like, you take away...
That wasn't, like, 3 months ago. That was, like, 4 games ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you take away, like, the Jack Besh opening, you know, kickoff return fumble, you know, the game's probably different. The game script goes a little different. It's probably closer. You know, maybe it's only a 2-score game instead of a 4-score game. I still just, from a play-to-play basis, Tennessee thoroughly outplayed LSU in that game. And so I cannot say that LSU is better than Tennessee. Therefore, I cannot say LSU would beat Georgia. I think Georgia's a world better than Alabama. I mean, in every way, shape, or form, I think Georgia's just on a different level right now. I think they're the best team in the country. Pretty. I mean, I would have voted for them if I had an AP vote, which I don't want. Grapes, I do not want an AP vote.
Yeah, well, you're okay. The poll doesn't count. Grape Swishy did say he thinks LSU might be the second best defense in the country behind Georgia. The statistics would obviously disagree there. I think they're fifth in the SEC right now and just barely cracked the top 50 nationally, but certainly playing well enough to win, which is all that matters.
I don't know. I'd have to think about where they rank exactly, but you know, they're obviously very good. Like if you just do eyeball test of us watching college football, they definitely feel like a top 10-15 defense just on how they've played against Ole Miss and in this game against Alabama. But we said going into the game, Alabama's receivers are kind of limit what they can do. So I think they just are very, very well coached and they play to their strengths.
Very. So there you go. Matt House, shout out. And all the defensive coaches. They've been really, really continuing to develop well this year. Cairo Tiger, do you see Harold Perkins playing a similar role with us playing a mobile quarterback in KJ Jefferson? His acceleration while spying is ridiculous. Maddie B, you've done a lot of film study this year. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll do the same exact thing pretty much. He did it a little bit against Dart as well. I think they balance his spying with his rushing really well. Keep offensive lines off balance a bit. But I think they'll mix it in here and there wherever they need to. So I think they did a really good job with that against Young, and I think he'll continue to do that against Jefferson.
I like this next question. NolaFan33 has got two questions. We'll take the first part. First one first. With the way the O-line has performed recently, has y'all's opinion changed on inserting Dellinger back into the starting lineup? And Brian Kelly said that Dellinger worked out on Sunday, looked good. He's going to practice this week, and it sounds like he's a full go for Arkansas. I dig this question because do I think Dellinger is one of their five best O-linemen? Yes.
Yeah.
Do I think their O-line has looked the best they have all year without him? Yes. Now, I don't think that's because he's not in there. I just think these five have grooved well across a few really tough games. So my answer is I would not put Dellinger back in unless I saw some struggles or unless guys just needed, you know, rotating.
It's tough because, like, you have Anthony Bradford right now is who he would come in for. Anthony Bradford at the guard spot is who he would come in for. And I think Bradford's done well. The biggest thing for me in rewatching it, and I'm going to have a story up pretty soon. It's like 70% done. But the biggest thing to me is that they didn't have any busts. Like, they were on the same page. And it's not like Bamba was just sitting there with four or three and just, you know, going right up the field. They were twisting. They were stunting. They were doing all this different stuff. And the LSU offensive line picked it up exceptionally. And so, and that's with two freshmen, obviously. I think Charles Turner's a big reason for that.
Charles Turner's a huge reason.
But I also give credit to the guards. And while I think Dellinger would be fine stepping back in, I would be hesitant to put him in, you know, for this game. At least as a starter, I think I'd play him, but you know, how much you start him, I don't know.
Really, again, I don't think anyone would disagree that he's one of the five best O-linemen you have, 100%. But it is an intriguing question. Then NolaFan asked, LSU and Arkansas traded transfers last year. Mm-hmm. How much of an advantage do you think Brooks and Fuchsia are with the intel they can bring, vice versa with McGlothern and Jackson never really experiencing our new staff? Yeah, I don't think any of that matters that much. I mean,
You can watch film and see
what everyone's doing. So, but it will be interesting. I mean, Landon Jackson didn't play at LSU really, but he's been solid up there now that he's healthy. McGlothern was a big loss. He'd be obviously playing a lot at corner if he was playing for LSU right now. He's familiar from practices with Boutte and Neighbors and those guys. But I do think
Bricks.
Right. No doubt.
That's why, yeah, I agree with you in that it doesn't really.
I almost feel like LSU fans aren't coming with that same spite for McGlothern that they are for Ricks. But anyhow, I'll say,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Fushan, Craig Brooks, I think, will be up for this game.
Yes.
They played at Arkansas for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. So you're going back there, and yeah, they definitely want to play well. The only thing I'll add, I don't think we have a question about this, just real quickly. Drew Sanders, transfer from Alabama over there, is a monster for them. I knew he was. I watched him at Denton Ryan. Obviously, North Texas is in Denton, so I saw Denton Ryan play plenty. And Drew Sanders was a monster there. Five-star, you know, athlete, all that stuff. Goes to Alabama, transfers to Arkansas, and I believe he's leading the SEC in sacks now. So
I heard multiple Bama fans during and after that game this past weekend saying that they wish they had Drew Sanders back because they could have used him.
He's something.
Hi. Musky Tiger asked, and that's M-U-S-K-I-E for reference. Do you think in some weird way that getting blown out by Tennessee saved the season? I'm sure there was still progress being made anyway, but Jaden really never started taking downfield shots until the game was already over against Tennessee, and he's had some success. I wonder if that game had stayed close, if we would have ever seen him open it up like he has without playing in a blowout.
I thought
in that game he was aggressive
throughout. It was a weird game.
It was a weird game. Like you said, they were off script. I think more so than anything, the Florida State loss helped them realize that they needed to buckle in and that they couldn't make mistakes and just roll out of bed and beat a team. So, but it's an interesting thought. I certainly think they played great since that Tennessee loss. But I look back at that Florida State one for me and just think that was kind of a turning point for them right out of the gates.
Yeah, I don't think getting blown up by Tennessee changed anything, because that would insinuate that before the Tennessee game that Brian Kelly and the coaching staff didn't have them on the right trajectory. I believe they were always on the right trajectory. Just how quickly could they get there? I don't think the Tennessee game changed that at all. I think they still would have beat Florida. I think they still would have beat Ole Miss, whether that game was close or a blowout against Tennessee. I just don't think so.
And I think going into that Tennessee game, the narrative was already set that Jaden had to start throwing to the receivers. Yes. You know, that was like a talking point of that week.
That was right after the Alabama game, or the Auburn game, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, yeah, he comes off 86 passing yards. We're like, all right, at some point you have to throw the ball. Kelly was asked about it like 20 times. So,
yeah, I think that was going to happen regardless if they got blown out or not. He just finally became a little bit more aggressive in that sense.
Yeah.
Tiger Ranch asked the same thing about O-line performed well against Bama. Does Dellinger sit again this week to improve his health? It sounds like he's going to go. We just don't know if he'll actually get into the lineup or rotate. So, definitely a big thing to watch. Brian O2 or Brian O2, I never really asked him what that username is, but can you elaborate on the post locker room celebration after the win, just the level of excitement compared to the other wins? I mean, we weren't in the locker room. You see video and everything like that. Obviously the guys were pumped. Hell, I don't even know if a lot of the guys made it back to the locker room because they were stuck on the field. I mean, by the time Brian Kelly's presser was over, I still saw players coming from off the field, but yes, yeah. Big win. They celebrate in the locker room every game. But I've heard this from a number of people, and I believe it to be true, around the program. And people that have been here before Kelly got here is that teams from the past would have celebrated this Bama win all week long, and Arkansas would be a trap game. I think that team celebrated the game in the locker room, and then the focus shifted. And I think they're back here ready to go to work this week, knowing that truly, the chance to play for a championship is still in front of them. But, I'd imagine they were having some fun in the locker room. Three game balls. Let's see. I think it was
Sir Rick Bernard Converse.
Correct. He got a pick.
Did Bramblett get one? I believe.
Bramblett. And then
Williams. Am I right?
No. Makai Wingo got one.
Oh, okay. Then I'm completely off then.
Okay, you do some talking and I'm doing some Googling.
You do the research.
I'll do the research.
Where are we at? From a post locker room celebration standpoint, I mean, the recruits were going crazy. That much we do know. I mean, they posted as much that they were having fun. So that's always good to see. All right, Bourbon Cheerios has a few. We'll skip out the first one. is a little satirical. It seems this Steph can coach right. Yes, this Steph can
right,
coach.
Correct.
As we know. How about Jaden Daniels creeping into the Heisman race? I said he needs to be in at least the conversation of like top five. You know, I mean, it's hard going through it in the top of your head. Stroud is always going to be there. Hooker, I think, would still probably have my vote just because of what Tennessee's done. Obviously, assuming they don't fall off a cliff. You know, Drake May from North Carolina is going to be up there. So you have a lot of guys, and I'm sure there's definitely names I'm forgetting, but that's three that just stuck out to me. I would put Jaden Daniels up there if they win out. I think it's going to be real interesting to see where he finishes in the voting, because I'm assuming he'll get some, you know, top four, top five votes for sure. Why didn't Bruni storm the field? Bro, did you see how many people there were down there? First of all, in order to, for the media to get down to the field, we would have had to leave like, what, you know, 4 minutes left in regulation, 5 minutes left in regulation. I don't know about y'all, but I was not leaving that seat for anything. I was watching that game completely locked in. I had no interest in going on the field and not being able to see some things and, you know, having to watch the scoreboard and stuff like that. I had a great seat. I was working, writing up a recap and watching the game. So I didn't go out on the field. Then after the game, Shay and I are looking at the field like, how are we even going to get to the tunnel? So I was comfortable. I was good. It was fun, though. Fun to see.
I cannot find those game balls anywhere. That doesn't matter. But right. I did see that while I was clicking through that, the video, that if you haven't checked it out, LSU football's got it on their social media accounts. But and I'm sure it'll be on LSU Gold. Probably can watch the entire post-game locker room celebration. But Brian Kelly did say to the team, hey, look, we went for two because I want to put it in y'all's hands. And obviously the team went wild there. But he said he wasn't going to let anyone else decide it. I almost took that to mean the referees. He was riding them all game long. But that was kind of what led off his post-game locker room speech was, hey, guys, we went for two because I want y'all to decide the game.
And I think he, in the back of his head, even if it wasn't at the forefront, I think in the back of his head, he thought about that Florida State game and how he played for overtime to a degree. And obviously kicking the extra point in that situation, in my opinion, I would have gone for two in the Florida State game more than I would have in this Alabama game. I thought in the Alabama game, the LSU defense was, I mean, looking excellent. There was a lot of signs that they were going to be able to stop Alabama. I had no problem with them kicking the extra point, but they went for two and got it, obviously. The Florida State game, to me, I thought they should have definitely gone for two. And so maybe he thought about that and he's like, we're going to win this game. We're not putting it in anybody else's hands. Referees, kicker, nothing. We're going to go win this game with Jaden Daniels, who has been amazing. So that's how I took it as well. All right. Are you still looking for the players, or we can go to the next one here?
You know, I read this in Ross Dellinger's Sports Illustrated piece, but he mentioned it. Now I'm looking back at the GIF. October 18th, 2014, Notre Dame, Florida State, they ran the exact same play, pretty much. Just the rollout, hit the tight end coming across, and that was for the win on fourth and goal. Notre Dame got called for a pick on the play, gets called back. They do not win the game. And Brian Kelly goes right back to it. He said that was a play he knew he wanted. You saw him hand over the headsets right whenever that last time out from Bama came in. That was it. And this time, no pick called. It all looked clean.
Yeah.
Boy,
they did a good job. Yeah, they did
a good job. What a call.
All right. What else?
Yeah, LSU G15. Is Mike Jones hurt, or is he simply too far down the depth chart? DeMario Tolan, who's a freshman, got some snaps in crunch time. You've watched a lot of linebackers this year, and you've said it before, right? They've just kind of gotten to a point where they're relying on other guys.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I don't think he's hurt. We hadn't heard anything of him hurt. There's been no sign of him hurt. But, yeah, I just think he's down the depth chart at this point. DeMario Tolan, though, on a more positive note, he looked really solid in his snaps, and I'm interested to see how he continues to develop because he's looked good so far. I know – LSU fans last year were all high on Greg Penn, and now they're all out on Greg Penn. So who knows where we'll be at Tolan next year when he gets a bigger role, or maybe, you know, whether it's Perkins slides on the inside or Tolan slides up the depth chart with Baskerville gone. That's going to be interesting. But Tolan is someone I was really high on just watching his high school film. And he's proving that he is capable of playing at this level really early. So that's good.
Yeah, Iowa City Tiger fan had asked a similar question about Tolan playing in the fourth and overtime and some really obviously important snaps and big moments. And it's clear that Matt House is starting to trust him in those spots. So could be a trend. Also, he did. And then Harold Perkins cramped up at the end of that game. So I don't know if he got in some of those snaps. But yeah, we're seeing more of Tolan. Funky Bunch 10. Do you have any concerns with Jaden against Arkansas's zone defense this weekend? I'm surprised Bama didn't run more zone or use a spy to limit Jaden's scrambling ability. You're shaking your head. Yes.
Yeah. Bama did run. Like we said, they ran a lot of man stuff or even just quarters, but they were pretty safe in a lot of what they did. So I think Arkansas, you have Drew Sanders there. I'm assuming you have to try to get to Daniels a little bit more, but other than that, the Arkansas secondary has been so bad. I can't see them really manning up here. They've been really, really poor against the pass. So even if they play man or play zone, I think you'll see some bust. I think you'll see Jaden be able to maybe hit a couple more vertical shots than what we've seen before. And, you know, give those receivers a chance against a secondary that has been, like I said, pretty bad this year. So I think that's going to be an interesting point, though, to watch, see how Arkansas does that.
Utah Tiger, Esquire, ESQ. Does LSU become Bama-like in its attractiveness to transfers this year? I mean, I would have said that LSU is pretty attractive to transfers this offseason.
Yeah,
and a lot of the starters, because there was a need for them. I would say that it could become attractive to a much smaller group. There's not as much of a need for guys, and more often than not, transfers are looking for immediate playing time. So you don't need to transfer quarterback. You don't need to transfer, like, big-time receiver, I don't think. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a very transfer-heavy group. I think they may need a D-tackle.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be transfer-heavy either. I think, yeah, D-tackle will be interesting depending on Jaqueline Roy's decision. You know, maybe some spots on the defense here or there. Depending on where you put Perkins, I think that's a big looming decision over the offseason. Do you move him inside permanently, which I think they will? So that'll be something to watch, and that kind of bases what your defense is about. The secondary gets young really quick if you assume, you know, Colby Richardson, Joe Fuscia, Jarek Bernard Converse, who, I mean, some other names I'm not naming, whatever. I think it's Jay Ward probably up in there as well. So
he's a senior.
Yeah, so that may be secondary, but I do think while they don't take as many, I am interested to see if maybe they go after, if they can get one of those top guys like a Jordan Addison, like, right? I just throwing it out there. If you can get a Jordan Addison level receiver or player at any position, why not? That would be interesting.
I mean, you would take them. I'd say tight end too. And I'm not,
yes.
I know Mason Taylor just had an amazing game. They just don't have any tight ends and they want to be able to use multiple tight ends. I think they need more. So a transfer tight end, but I'll say this, and you'll always need transfers. I mean, you'll take advantage of the portal because it could give you good players, but there still is a place in college football for kind of sustained roster and building something, which I think Kelly wants. Prime example, Georgia, zero transfers taken this offseason.
Yeah. And Bama picked up like receivers and, you know, a bunch of pieces, corners. I mean, Bama picked up some DBs, and I think it's because maybe they either missed evaluations or a couple guys didn't pan out, and now they're having to rely on them. And so you have a couple holes here and there. Obviously, you really want to, you know, just backfill with freshmen continuously, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more quality over quantity at this point. Well, obviously, you can't go any more quantity than they did last year, but I think you see a lot more quality over quantity approach in the transfer portal from LSU.
Oh, LSU so asked five questions, but all of them are recruiting, so I'm just going to answer those in
Roll them off.
The thread. No, I'm going to just answer them in the thread. We're going to keep this to be a team recruiting pod coming tomorrow. Maybe I'll bring those up to Billy on there, but I'll also answer them on the board for him. Famous Amos, general question about college coaching. The secret playbook is a running joke in the LSU community for years, but it seems the game-winning two-point conversion was actually somewhat of a secret play. In your opinions, how much of the entire playbook is typically held back throughout the year for those quote-unquote must-convert situations? 10%, 20%, building on that, how many brand new plays do coaches try to install each week? I don't know about new week installs, and I don't think that's going to be a ton during the season. You're kind of just putting in stuff that you've had in that you just want to apply to the opponent. I'd bet they tuck away plays. Like, I would think more often than any other thing, you're tucking away 2-point conversion type plays. You know,
they have fourth a whole and book
one
of,
type plays.
Yeah, exactly. They have a whole book of fourth or short yardage, one play situation type plays. I think a lot of it's also based off of what they've run throughout the game to a degree. For example, in the game against Alabama, and I think this entire season, but really against Alabama, Mason Taylor was moving around almost every snap. And a lot of those situations, he moved to set up the run. And in the 2-point conversion, obviously, he moved to the opposite side and, you know, could have set up a run there. But instead, it's a little pull, and he runs across the back end. And there, I don't think it's a – it wasn't a groundbreaking play at all. I mean, you mentioned they ran in 2014. We've seen similar type of plays like that throughout the season where Mason Taylor will leak out across the back. I don't even think it was a secret play. I think it was just really a play that they trusted. So,
And the goal on that one is clear. You've got a couple receivers wide, and you've got them both running slants to try to just jam things up to where whoever's coming across trailing on Mason from the other side can't get over there quick enough, and that's about what happened. So I thought Mike Denbrock called a really, really good game. He just doesn't get, I don't think anybody's praised him yet this week, and he had a really, really good game plan. Jay Reyes asked about DBs and how many they take in the class. That's another recruiting question, since this is mainly a team pod, or actually only a team pod. I'll answer that on the board, and then we'll talk a lot about that tomorrow on the recruiting podcast with Billy. Okay, Silver Moon. Thoughts on the job Matt House has done, especially following the Tennessee game, and how House has evolved the defense since the beginning of the year. Then he just goes on to talk a little bit about the role that Baskerville's had and kind of how he's changed, and obviously Mike Jones Jr. changing. Top tacklers after 9 games are Baskerville and Perkins with 56 and 44. Ojulari with 36 tackles from the Jack. Boy, those three guys have been uber productive. But your thoughts, I guess my quick thing would be, while you collect your thought here, Matt, I'm most impressed by his in-game and halftime adjustments.
Yes.
I think that they've been excellent after halftime, and they've been excellent after those scripted drives get out of the way and you start to get a feel for kind of what you're up against and what you need. And this is, again, look, great hire by Brian Kelly, who has a very impressive track record of defensive coordinator hires, from Marcus Freeman, obviously, to House, to Clark Lee. There's been a lot of guys that he's hired to coach the defense and have been really, really, really good coaches. So I think this is just another hit. I think Brian Kelly knows how to find defensive coordinators that can be multiple, that can be versatile, and can kind of do really well with in-game adjustments.
Yeah, I'll take my victory lap, because before the season I said that he was perfect for the personnel in this defense, and I think that's been proven right. Even before we knew about how good Perkins was, I mean, B.J. Ojulari off the edge, the defensive line is perfect for what he wants to do, and the secondary I don't think is ever asked to do too much. Like the Tennessee game, is what it is. But before that game, I was saying that this is a top 4 or 5 defense in the SEC, and then after the Tennessee game, I still pretty much believe that, even though, you know, the Florida game wasn't great, but the adjustments in the Ole Miss game were awesome, and then after the first possession against Alabama, they really buckled down, and I think that's, you got to give credit to Matt House. He's been terrific this year.
Big time. He's been great. Both coordinators were really good in that one. Yep. Bayou Tiger 22 asked a recruiting question. I don't think everybody's so excited after the Bama win that they're just throwing recruiting stuff into our team pod here. So I'll save some of these and bring them to Billy tomorrow. Sex Haver makes his second debut into the podcast here, the mailbag, and he asks, where's Gunnar Keel? Which is the most random thing we've ever been. I have no idea whatever happened to Gunnar Keel. Let's
Google that. Go ahead. I don't know who that is.
Oh, he was a guy that was an old All-American in high school, and he committed to LSU, and then he flipped to Notre Dame at the last second. Or I think he maybe ended up going to Notre Dame, but Les Miles said he had no chest. He went to Notre Dame, and then says, I don't know where Gunnar Keel is these days. I don't think he's anywhere playing football, obviously. Oh, and then he said, I'll buy Shea Blanton's if he gets Taylor Ham to work on the site. So we've got a Gunnar Keel and a Taylor Ham reference in the same post. Good job by Mr. Haver there.
Mr. Haver.
Crazy. Yeah, by his professional name. Captain Planet, 246. Linebacker. Still seems to be an issue. Not with Perkins, obviously. Penn really seems to struggle at times. And Baskerville would be gone. Could you see the staff trying to target another high school prospect on top of Weeks and Braithwaite? I also think this could be a portal spot if you need it. I am going to probably get roasted here. I still have faith in Greg Penn. I think people are treating Greg Penn like they did Damone Clark really early in his career. And by his senior year, Damone Clark was the most important person on the defense. I don't know if it'll be quite that trajectory, but I do believe that Greg Penn can develop into a better player than he's been this year, when I think he's just a step slow and he's not really a sideline to sideline guy. And
yeah,
I think he's got better days ahead.
Yeah, he's not the fastest, which I think shows when he's on the field with Perkins. And I think Baskerville has been pretty good as well as far as speed goes. But he clearly has a role in this defense, right? He's clearly the physical guy that can take on blocks there. I've personally, whenever I watch games, rewatch games, I don't have nearly the problem with Penn that fans on our board seem to have. I guess I'm missing something. I'm not saying he's been great by any stretch.
Neither does Matt House, obviously. He plays him every game.
Yeah, Matt House, obviously. Either. Like, I don't think he's been great, obviously. But, like, I'm not here like, oh, that play is Greg Penn's fault. Obviously, Greg Penn's fault. Like, sure, there are times where I feel like maybe he can get off a block quicker. Maybe he can be quicker to the ball, fill gaps better. But overall, I think he's been real solid, and I think he has a role in this defense. So I don't have a problem. And he's a second-year player. I think he'll get better with time, like you said, third year, fourth year. Continue to build up. Baskerville is going to be gone, but I think they're in a pretty good spot at linebacker, especially if Perkins moves inside.
Oh, last question. LSU, Houston, or HOU. Who are the freshmen that may not have gotten significant running games, but have begun to impress in practice? I'm sure people want to hear Walker Howard, right? But I'm not one that wants to lump a bunch of expectations onto a backup quarterback who's, you know, nine games into his redshirt freshman year and is simply going through practice. So for me, I honestly believe that the best freshmen are playing. They're starting them at offensive tackle. They're starting them at linebacker. They're starting them at tight end. Quincy Wiggins was a guy they wanted to get involved. He's just been banged up, I think, for a lot of the season.
Wiggins will be good.
I think Wiggins will be good. Well, I haven't heard a lot about the young guys in practice. I know that they've got – let me see.
I mean, from what we saw in fall camp, because obviously practices are not open to the media anymore, I'm still high on Jordan Allen, whether it's nickel or safety.
Well, you've got Allen, you've got Welsh, you've got some DBs there.
Yeah, the DBs – I mean, I had Welsh as my number one player coming out of the 2020 class – or 2022 class. So, and obviously just based on film, like just – I really liked his film. So, I loved
Terrence Welsh. You know what? We've got another Mason Taylor, Emory Jones, and Will Campbell start at tackle. Mason Taylor starts at tight end. Harold Perkins starts at linebacker edge, or at least plays a lot, however you want to put it. But there was another, Nathan Dibert, kicking off now, and he kicks it to the end zone, which is all you got to do.
Yes. He did have the one kick out of bounds, but that's all right. I thought it was inches away from being in bounds and being a touchback again, but I'm assuming that was a planned angled kick, trying to throw off Alabama after, you know, a couple touchbacks, maybe throw them off, keep it in play, try to pooch it to the corner, and it didn't quite work. I don't hate that. But yeah, DeMario Tolan's been playing a good amount. I mean, you go through this.
Yeah, you mentioned Tolan, so that's six right there.
Yeah, that's six with Tolan.
If you throw in Walker Howard, he's obviously not going to play. That's like seven guys. They only signed 15 high school guys.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to say.
Almost half of them are already playing.
Yeah, Ibieta's been out. So anyways.
Quincy Wiggins, who obviously you lean upon heavily whenever he's going to be healthy one day. So, yeah.
Yeah.
More than half. About half this class of 15 high school signees is already playing.
Crazy.
That'll do it.
There you go. We got out of there. 45-minute podcast. Let me put the hat on again to reaffirm. Shea doesn't have his hat on. He's not a real Bengal Tiger Founders Club member here like us.
It did not get lost in the celebration. I've got it.
Shea was in the press box throwing his hat up. Yeah, y'all should have seen Shea. But anyways, This was fun. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the Bengal Tiger on 3 site as well if you haven't already. Send it to a friend. Tell a friend to subscribe as well. I mean, the amount of information that goes up on that site, on our site every day, is incredible. So tomorrow, Tuesday, is the recruiting podcast. Check that out as well. And yeah, comment, share, leave a 5-star rating and review if you're listening on the audio side. We appreciate that as well. And yeah, we will talk to y'all later.